Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. NFL Week 3. Let's recap it. And, of course, let's start with my favorite football team. You've been listening to the loyal listeners of the Dion Gordon Podcast. I already know where I'm going with this. Let's start with the Sunday night football game. 49ers, Packers, Green Bay, San Francisco, and Santa Clara, California, Levi's Stadium, NBC, Sunday Night Football, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, Michelle Tafoya, big-time football game. Home opener for the 49ers coming out in those glorious, beautiful, cherry red 94 throwback uniforms, the uniforms of my youth, of my childhood. I have such reverence for this team. The 94 championship team is the single greatest season football team ever. The single season greatest football team ever. You could talk about the 72 Dolphins who went undefeated. You could talk about the 85 Bears. You could talk about any of the Pittsburgh teams from the 70s, any of the Cowboys teams. You could talk about the 84 49ers. You could talk about any team you want to. I don't care what you're talking about. In my own estimation, in my opinion, the 1994 San Francisco 49ers are the single season greatest football team ever assembled. Steve Young, Ricky Waters, who should be in the Hall of Fame, William Barnum Floyd, a fullback out of Florida State, Jerry Rice, John Taylor, Brent Jones, Harris Barton, Jesse Sapolo, Derek Deese, Steve Wallace. Defensively, Lee Woodall, primetime Deion Sanders, Gary Plummer, Eric Davis, Toy Cook, Merton Hanks, Tim McDonald. Chris Dolman was on that football team. Ricky Jackson, another Hall of Famer, was on that football team. Dana Stubblefield, Bryant Young. My man Ken Norton Jr., middle linebacker on that team, was a big free agent acquisition coming over from the Dallas Cowboys along with Deion Sanders, who came over as a free agent from the Atlanta Falcons. That team is special to me. That team is, was, and always will be special to me. I love that team dearly. They kicked ass after getting blown out by the Philadelphia Eagles early in the season when Steve Young got benched by head coach George Seifert and cursed him out on the way to the sideline. After that, it was a crime spree. It was a 12-game death march on the way to Miami to win championship number 5. The biggest bugaboo for the 49ers back then was beating the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys had beaten us in 92 and 93, and a very young Dion Gordon at the age of 7 and 8 cried himself to sleep in consecutive years because those son-of-a-bitch low-grade Dallas Cowboys broke his heart and beat his beloved San Francisco 49ers in consecutive NFC Championship games. And now in 94, we got the ball rolling. We bring in primetime, bring in Ken Norton Jr. and Chris Dolman and Ricky Jackson and a few other guys to what we already had and get the ball rolling after that Philadelphia debacle and just roll right through the regular season, just punching people in the mouth and beating the shit out of teams week in and week out, putting 30, 40, and 50 on teams, getting to the playoffs, destroying Chicago Bears in the divisional round and in the NFC Championship game once again for the third year in a row was those cocksuckers from Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys coming out to Candlestick Park, and the 49ers go up 21-0 in the NFC Championship game and never look back, and they win the game 38-28 and then roll on to Super Bowl 29, which was a mere formality, a walk in the park. The real Super Bowl was the NFC Championship game. The actual Super Bowl was just, like I said, a mere formality. The San Diego Chargers were just participants in the San Francisco 49ers Invitational. This game was never in doubt. San Francisco 49, San Diego 26. Steve Young, my favorite quarterback of my childhood, 6 touchdown passes in that game. It's a wonderful performance and a great, great time to be a 49er fan. To see the complete and utter dominance it displayed throughout the entire year. Like I said, the Super Bowl itself was just a coronation, if you will. It was a coronation of the league's best football team, and in my opinion, like I already said, the greatest single-season football team ever assembled, the 1994 San Francisco 49ers. So to see, to fast forward to last Sunday, and to see the modern-day incarnation of the 49ers come out in those beautiful cherry-red throwback uniforms, it warmed my heart with so much joy. It brought me back to when I was 9 years old and watching this team dominate and beat the dog shit out of teams on a weekly basis with those same uniforms on. Conjured up memories of Steve Young throwing those 6 touchdown passes and Ricky Waters running through defenses and Jerry Rice catching a touchdown pass with a separated shoulder and Ken Norton punching the goalposts and primetime getting the pick 6 versus the Atlanta Falcons and running down the sideline. high-stepping and talking shit to his former team in the Georgia Dome on his way to a score for a pick six. Just beautiful, just memories, just greatness, just awesomeness, just back when the 49ers were Camelot. So I just wanted to mention that. It was so fucking cool to me to see the 49ers come out in those cherry red throwbacks. They've been wearing the white throwbacks for the past couple of years, but they finally this season decided to get back to the cherry red throwbacks. Awesome uniforms, beautiful, love the look, love the aesthetic. Unfortunately, did not love the result of last Sunday night's game versus the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay 30, San Francisco 28. Up and down football game. Green Bay gets out to a 17-0 lead. For the second consecutive week, the 49ers couldn't move the football, barely scored in the first half. Had to wait till inside the two-minute warning to score in the first half for the second consecutive week. That's a problem. That's alarming. That should be alarming to anybody with half a functioning brain. Can you name for me another playoff-contending football team in this league that has gone back-to-back weeks struggling to score in the first half of a football game? Can you name for me another playoff-contending, Super Bowl-contending team that went an entire first quarter without getting a first down, as the 49ers failed to do last week versus the vaunted Philadelphia Eagles, who, you know, last week so many people told me the Eagles were such a great defense. That's why the 49ers couldn't score. That's why they couldn't move the football, because Philadelphia has such a great defense. And then you watch Monday Night Football and you see the Dallas Cowboys put 41 points on this same defense that stifled and beleaguered and shut down the 49ers for much of the game last week and held them to a measly 17 points. So I watch a lot of football. I'm watching these games and thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. We played this same team a week ago and barely put up 17 points. And that same team that everyone told me is such a great defense, and that's why the 49ers struggled last week against them, comes out on Monday Night Football and gets blasted 41 and gives up 41 points. I wonder what's the problem. I mean, sure, Brandon Graham got hurt in that game versus the 49ers, so it's not the same exact defense. Even without Brandon Graham, they still shut down the 49ers offense last week. So they have 1 week where you struggle to score points in the first half. You don't score until you get inside a two-minute warning. That's concerning. To do that in back-to-back weeks should be even more concerning. Should be even more of a problem. 17-0 Green Bay going into the two-minute warning. One of the things that stuck out to me in the first half of this game is 10-0 Green Bay. The 49ers offense is spinning its tires in the mud. They're sputtering. They're struggling. They're not playing good football. Jimmy Garoppolo is erratic. He's missing open receivers once again. He's inaccurate with the football, making poor decisions. He threw a pick. He tried to hit George Kittle on a seam route that got picked off by Jair Alexander, who's probably the best corner in the National Football League. No shame in throwing the pick to Jair Alexander. However, my man Ross Dwelley, the backup tight end, the second tight end on the 49ers behind George Kittle, is wide the fuck open about 10 yards in front of Jimmy Garoppolo on first down and 10. This is not a third and long situation. You don't have to force a throw. I've been clamoring for Jimmy to take shots and throw it downfield for about 5 years now, but all season long especially. But this was not the spot to do that. Kittle was doubled, number one. Al Michaels said that during the game broadcast. Garoppolo throws into double coverage. Jair Alexander, first of all, Green Bay is playing quarters coverage, which is a four deep, three under zone defense that uses man-to-man principles, right? So Jair Alexander is on the far side of the field towards the far sideline. He takes off. He's covering Deebo Samuel, or at least he's in the zone where Deebo Samuel's in. And he peels off of him. He recognizes this deep throw down the sideline, down the seam, I should say. Down the seam to George Kittle. He peels off of Deebo Samuel and runs over and makes a miraculous interception. Great play by Jair Alexander, but like I said, Ross Dwelley is wide the fuck open right in front of Jimmy Garoppolo's eyes. And instead of hitting an easy pass on first down and 10, playing smart football, he tries to force it down the seam to George Kittle. Once again, I've been wanting Jimmy to push it down the field, but not into double coverage. This was a poor read by Jimmy. He had a shaky first half. No other way to put it. No other way to call it. He did not play well. And the offense as a whole did not play well. The running game is non-existent. The 49ers right now are running with a makeshift running game, a patchwork, ragtag group of guys. Trey Sermon played in this game, the third-round draft pick out of Ohio State. Other than that, Elijah Mitchell didn't play. Raheem Mostert's already out for the season. So Jeff Wilson's been out since OTAs back in June. They had to sign Trenton Cannon off the practice squad. More on him in a little bit. Trenton Cannon from Baltimore. You know, they had to sign a guy from the XFL. I mean, the 49er run game is in shambles right now, much like the 49er secondary. But you get down 10-0, you're at midfield, you finally put together a drive. It's 3rd and 1, they hand the ball to Trey Sermon, he gets stuffed. Now it's 4th and 1. I was taken aback by the fact that Kyle Shanahan elected to go with a punt in this situation and give the ball back to Aaron Rodgers. Your offense needs a spark. You need to score. It's 10-0. You're at home. Home opener. 94 throwbacks. You need to put some points up on the board. You need some kind of momentum. You punt the ball back to Aaron Rodgers. I understood part of it, why you made this decision, because you're at midfield. You're trusting your defense. You're trying to pin them back. You don't want to potentially get stopped in midfield and give Aaron Rodgers half a field. But on the flip side of that, I say you're Kyle Shanahan. You're one of the best offensive play callers in the NFL. You're a genius, right? That's what everyone says. That's what I say. You don't have a play for 4th and 1 in midfield. You can't give the ball back to Trey Sermon. Jimmy Garoppolo a week prior versus Philadelphia was 100% on all of his quarterback sneaks. You can't call that play again? Or better yet, I have an idea. I'm raising my hand right now. You got a rookie quarterback on the sideline who's about 6'4", 230, who's adept at using his arms and his legs. A dual-threat quarterback that you can use in multiple situations. When he's on the field, you're playing 11 on 11. So you have Trey Lance on your team. You couldn't dial up a play for Trey Lance to get you 1 yard on 4th and 1? We punt the ball back to Green Bay. A few defensive pass interference penalties, which was a theme throughout the night. And truthfully, you know, most of the time it was. I agree it was a defensive pass interference. I'm not going to complain too much about it. The referees did not cost us this game. Too many 49er fans get lazy and try to point the finger at the referees and say the refs cost us this game. Bullshit. The refs made bad calls on both sides. There were a number of calls that went against Green Bay that were fucked up. There were a number of calls that should have gone against San Francisco that weren't called. Jimmy Garoppolo should have been flagged for an intentional grounding late in the first half. That's before Trey Lance ran in for a touchdown. That wasn't called. Jimmy Ward should have been called for targeting on a helmet-to-helmet shot on Devontae Adams in the 4th quarter. There were a number of egregiously bad calls that affected both teams. This game was poorly officiated on both sides. I don't want to hear no crying and whining about the referees fucked over the 49ers in this game. They fucked over Green Bay, too. Let's just be honest. Let's be fair. As I say at the onset of every podcast, call it right down the middle. The referees fucked this game up on both sides. But Green Bay moves the ball down the field and ends up scoring another touchdown to go up 17-0. Now you're inside of 1 minute in the first half. Green Bay kicks off. Trenton Cannon, the aforementioned Trenton Cannon, runs it back 68 yards on what I swear to God is the longest kickoff return I've seen from the 49ers in about 10 years when my man Ted Ginn was playing for the 49ers, a great return specialist, a great player overall in the NFL. Trenton Cannon takes it back 68 yards, puts the 49ers in great position right before the halftime to try to get a score and move it down inside to about the 5-yard line. Like I said, we're in good position to score. You need to score. You're down 17-0. You haven't scored at all. In about 29 minutes and 55 seconds of first half football, you don't score. A field goal, a touchdown, nothing. Jimmy throws a pass to Mohamed Sanu. Pass interference on rookie defensive back Eric Stokes from the University of Georgia, gets the ball to about the 1-yard line. There was a drop by Brandon Ayuk in the end zone. There was another throw that was incomplete. And like I said, what should have been called as an intentional grounding on Jimmy Garoppolo, but fortunately for us, it wasn't called. And then with about 2 seconds left, everyone's thinking, is Kyle going to send the field goal unit out there just to get some points, just to salvage this drive and get something out of it? Kyle shows some balls, and now he sends Trey Lance out there. Trey Lance comes out to the field. They have Trey Sermon go in motion. Trey Lance is basically in a wildcat formation, takes a direct snap, runs to his left. My man Trent Williams washed Eric Stokes on this play. Destroyed, eviscerated, annihilated this grown-ass man. As I said on the podcast last week, it is fun to watch Trent Williams play football. The way he destroys other grown men, somebody's mama's son. He kicks people's ass for a living. If you see Trent Williams coming your way, get the fuck out of his way. Run in the stands. Leave the field. Call the police. Seek shelter. Duck and cover. Stop, drop, open up shop. Get the fuck out of Trent Williams' way. Do not get run over by this mountain of a man, this beast, this monster coming at you full speed, about 6'5", 330, with bad intentions, ready to fuck you up. Alex Mack also had a nice block on this play, but Trent Williams sent Eric Stokes into the third dimension, into another galaxy, into a parallel universe. Trey Lance runs behind Trent Williams, scores easily. Now it's 17-7 Green Bay going into the half. Second half, San Francisco comes out with gets the ball first. 13-play, 83-yard drive, which culminates in Jimmy Garoppolo hitting Brandon Ayuk for a touchdown pass. 17-14. It's a game now. We're back in business. Green Bay gets the ball back. Aaron Rodgers throws an absolute fucking dime. A beautiful touchdown pass over the outstretched arms of rookie defensive back Diamador Lenore into the hands of Marquez Valdez-Scantling, 12-yard touchdown pass from A.A. Aaron, 24-14 Green Bay. San Francisco answers back with a touchdown drive of their own. Trey Sermon takes it in from 1 yard out, 24-21 Green Bay. The 49ers defense gets a stop. The offense gets the ball back. Jimmy Garoppolo has the ball at the 49er 42-yard line. And I don't know, I can't even explain this. I don't even know what the fuck happened. He attempted, I guess, though, a backwards pass. He spins around, throws this ball, gets the ball. He loses control of the football. The ball's out. It's a fumble. It's on the ground. Jimmy's pleading this case to the referee. As the ball is rolling around on the fucking ground, he is pleading his case, complaining to the referees, I didn't fumble it. It was a forward pass. No. It's a backwards pass, which means it's a fumble. Do you not know the rules of football? You're playing quarterback. You're the most important guy on the field. You should know everything. You don't know the rules of the game? It's a backwards pass. It's a fumble. And instead of going after the football and diving on the ball, making some type of effort and attempt to recover this fumble that you caused, he's pleading his case to the referees. He's backing up away from the football as other men are diving at the football trying to recover it. Green Bay recovers the football, takes over at about the 38-yard line. And I'm watching this shit, and I'm thinking to myself, are you fucking serious? Are you fucking serious? And I've heard no one call him out or excoriate him for this. In this same stadium 6 years ago in Super Bowl 50, Cam Newton playing for the Carolina Panthers against the Denver Broncos gets stripped by Von Miller. The ball's out on the ground. Cam Newton makes no attempt to go after the football. And to this day, Denver recovered and goes on to win the Super Bowl. And to this day, Cam Newton is still eviscerated, still crucified for the fact that he did not go after the football that he dropped on the ground. Fast forward 6 years later, there's no conversation at all about Jimmy Garoppolo fumbling the football and making zero attempt to go pick up the football, to dive on the ball. You dove head first in the preseason to score a meaningless touchdown versus the Las Vegas Raiders. You had no problem doing that. But in a real football game, NBC, Sunday night, the whole country watching, you fumble the football and make no attempt whatsoever to dive after it, and no one says anything about this. I've heard no one from the local media, no one from the national media, no one has said shit about Jimmy Garoppolo's zero effort, lack of effort, to pick up the fumble that he caused. With 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, a critical juncture in this game, you're down 24-21. Fortunately, the defense is able to stand up. And so many people have been killing the defense. The defense did okay. The defense did good enough, given the circumstances. The secondary is in shambles. Let's call it what it is. Josh Norman played okay for when he was out there, and he ends up like puncturing a lung or something like that. He's out. He was in the hospital the same night as the game. Emmanuel Mosley came back. You can see how he was rusty. He committed a few defensive pass interferences. You know, Jimmy Ward's hard, out of position on a few plays, especially at the end of the game. You know, the defense did what they could. It's a makeshift defense. And coming into the game, I thought we'd be able to control the line of scrimmage because Green Bay is playing with a backup left tackle, a third-string left tackle. Batiari's out. The second-string guy's out. You know, their offensive line's kind of in shambles. I thought our defensive line would be able to control the game. and control the line of scrimmage. I thought Bosa and Ford and Armstead and Kinlaw and DJ Jones and Consavius Street guys, even the backups, I thought they'd be able to come in and just have their way. That wasn't the case. Give credit to Green Bay for having a great game plan. They knew they were deficient up front in their offensive line, and what they did was they had the tight ends crash on the offensive line, chip the defensive ends, put basically double-team Bosa and D Ford and make them a non-factor. A lot of people will look at that game and say, where was D Ford and Nick Bosa? They were getting double-teamed most of the game. They were getting chipped. Like I said, Green Bay had a great game plan to provide as much protection as possible from Aaron Rodgers to keep him upright. And I said this going into the game. If we can't get the Aaron Rodgers, if he has time, he's going to carve this secondary up. The secondary, like I said, is in shambles. That secondary is not good. They are not equipped to go against the elite football teams in this league. Green Bay, Seattle, Arizona, the Los Angeles Rams. Holy shit. More on them in a little bit. But like I said last week, the St. Louis Rams are frightening. That team is scary. That team got a lot of smoke over there. I do not look forward to when the 49ers play the Rams this season. I don't want to see that. But going against the great football team, Tampa Bay too, going against the great football teams in this league, that secondary ain't going to hold up. I'm just being honest. I'm just being objective about what I'm talking about. That secondary is not going to hold water against elite football teams with elite quarterbacks, with great receivers who can make plays down the field. It held up in weeks 1 and 2 against Jared Goff and Jalen Hurts. It didn't hold up against Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers in this game, 23 of 33, 261, 2 TDs. Devontae Adams, 12 receptions, 132, 1 touchdown in the first quarter. They dominated. They won this game. Two guys from the Green Bay Packers won this game. Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams put on a clinic last Sunday night, and the 49ers had no answer for Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Like I said, they couldn't get pressure on Rodgers. They sacked him once, I think, but that wasn't enough. You go back to 2019 when the 49ers beat the Packers twice in one season, in a regular season game, also on Sunday night, and also the NFC Championship game. They controlled the line of scrimmage. They destroyed Green Bay up front. And Rodgers was running for his life. He had no time. He was under pressure. He was under siege all game. In both of those games in 2019. Different story this year. That was 2 years ago. Different story, different time. They had a game plan for it. They answered the challenge. They know they got pushed around and dominated 2 years ago. They've been hearing it for 2 years now. That's all the Green Bay Packers have been hearing, how they got their asses handed to them both times they came to Levi's Stadium in 2019. They got punished. They got beat like they stole something 2 years ago. It was uglier than a pair of No Limit sneakers. They got destroyed 37-8 on Sunday night and 37-21 in an NFC Championship game. They've been hearing that for 2 years. And they came out here. This you could see at the end of the game when they won. This meant a lot to them. This meant everything to them. They beat us last year in the regular season game, but that was the 49ers practice squad. That was a COVID football team we put out there in an empty stadium. That win low-key don't even count, really. But this was a real game. Levi's is packed. Sold-out stadium. And all of our good players that are on the team right now were healthy and playing outside of Jason Verrett, who's out for the season. You can see at the end of the game, this win meant a lot to them. Back to the game. It's 24-21. The fumble happens. The defense holds up, holds them to a field goal, make it 27-21. Jimmy Garoppolo, to his credit, we call things even on this podcast. We call it right down the middle. If I call you out when you fuck up, I'll call you out when you play well. Jimmy Garoppolo leads the football team down the field. Takes the 49ers down the field and scores a touchdown to Kyle Juszczyk. Threw a jump ball to Deebo Samuel on the drive that could have went a 50-50 ball, could have went either way. Alexander could have got a second pick. Deebo was able to fight him off and bring in possession for the 49ers. A big play on the drive with Jimmy Garoppolo hitting an in-breaking route to George Kittle for a 39-yard run. A perfectly, accurately thrown ball by Jimmy Garoppolo. Give him credit. When credit is due, a well-thrown, perfectly thrown football by Jimmy that hit George Kittle in stride and allowed him to catch the ball and run after the catch and pick up 39 yards. And then he gets about the 13-yard line. Jimmy goes through his progressions, comes back, looks to his right, comes back to his left. Kyle Juszczyk is running a Texas route. He's matched up one-on-one with a linebacker. The linebacker can't stay with him. First of all, man, salute to Kyle Juszczyk. Kyle Juszczyk adds such an added extra dimension to the 49er offense. You can't show me another team in the NFL that has their even has a fullback on the roster let alone is using their fullback as not only a blocker but also a receiver, and the guy's good enough to catch a go-ahead score for a touchdown in the fourth quarter. Show me another team that's doing that. Kyle Juszczyk is awesome. You can't spell his last name, but you can watch him play football, and he plays at a high level. He's incredible. Juszczyk makes the catch go up 28-27. San Francisco with the first lead of the game, 37 seconds left on the clock, and the first thing that popped in my head when Juszczyk scored was, did we leave Aaron Rodgers too much time? Now, Green Bay has zero timeouts. No timeouts at all. They kick the ball off. Green Bay takes it, starts out the 25-yard line, and then Rodgers and Davante Adams with the work. This was after Davante Adams took that shot from Jimmy Ward and goes into the tent and then comes back out. That's questionable number one. I was wondering, why was he not in concussion protocol? Because if you go back and watch that game, or even when you're first watching the game, he took that shot over the middle from Jimmy Ward. He was glossy in the eyes. He was fucked up. You can see he wasn't – I don't think he knew where he was at. If you would ask Davante Adams, where are you currently at right now, he might have told you Lambeau Field, despite the fact that he's in Santa Clara, California, in Levi's Stadium. He looked like he was out on his feet. He may or may not have had a concussion. Either way, he was back on the field, and he made a miraculous catch across the middle on a 25-yard in-breaking route. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, I've given Rodgers a lot of shit over the years. And really, the only time I give Rodgers shit is when people try to throw him in that GOAT conversation. Because to me, you know, the GOAT is only one person, number one. We can't have multiple GOATs. That shit's stupid. It's GOAT, greatest of all time, one person. And that one person, as far as quarterbacks in the NFL is concerned, is Tom Brady. If you want to say Joe Montana, I'll listen to that. If you want to say Peyton Manning, I'll entertain that. John Elway, I'll entertain that. Aaron Rodgers does not belong in the GOAT conversation. But if you want to talk about elite arm talent, if you want to talk about the ability to make every single throw and to make ridiculous throws that few, if any, other quarterbacks could even make, that throw he made over the outstretched arms of Fred Warner in the middle of the field to Davante Adams to get to the 50-yard line was a thing of beauty. You talking about dropping a dime? He dropped a penny, a dime, a nickel, a quarter, a silver dollar, a whole dollar, and spare change on top of that. Aaron Rodgers in this game, not only was he in his bag, he pulled out some luggage. He was awesome. As much shit as I've given him over the years, and it really only pertains to the GOAT conversation, like I said, but if you evaluate Aaron Rodgers individually as an NFL quarterback, he is special. There's no other way to put it. He's the reigning league MVP for a reason. Flip a coin between him and Mahomes. I would barely, by a cunt's hair margin, right now take Mahomes, even though Mahomes played awful last Sunday. It's one game, though, and Kansas City is 1-2. More on that later. But even with that being said, by a cunt's hair margin, a specific unit of measurement, I would take Patrick Mahomes over Aaron Rodgers. But there's no way a slight or disrespect to Aaron Rodgers. He is the arm talent, like I said, is special. As a fan of football, as a fan of quarterbacks, I watch him play all day. I will pay money. I will go to Lambeau and watch him play a football game. The throws he can make. I remember a throw a couple years ago. They were in the playoffs versus Dallas. And he rolls to, he's flushed out of the pocket and rolls to his left. And he's like parallel with the sideline. And throws a strike like 30 yards down the field on a rope to Jared Cook to set up the game-winning field goal for Green Bay to beat Dallas in that playoff game. That's one of the greatest throws I've ever seen. And he's been doing that his whole career. He makes those throws look routine, like basic, average, normal. There's 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, at least 26 of them can't make that throw. Jimmy Garoppolo certainly can't make that throw. But Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes and Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, whenever he does play, that's a whole different story. Brady can't even make that throw. That, most quarterbacks can't make those kind of throws. But Aaron Rodgers can make every throw that a quarterback needs to make or doesn't even need to make. He can improvise. Off schedule, on platform, off platform, rolling to his left, rolling to his right, back foot, wrong foot, back shoulder throw, back shoulder fade, cross, post, corner, fly route, angle, slant, corner, dig, curl, whatever. The playbook is open. Matt Stafford could also put Matt Stafford in that category too. Matt Stafford could also make that throw. He's got elite arm talent. So it's really about four, five, six guys tops that can make those kind of throws. But that throw that Rodgers made right over the head, right over the outstretched arms of Fred Warner, I'm not even mad about that. That's a tip of the cap moment. That's a salute moment. That's just acknowledge the opponent. That was an absolutely spectacular throw. And another throw was made to Devontae Adams after they spiked it from the first completion to get to the 50-yard line and spike it, run another play. Another throw to Devontae Adams, getting field goal position. Mason Crosby comes out and wins it. Green Bay 30, San Francisco 28, much to my chagrin. Like I said, though, tip of the cap to the opponent. You got to salute it, man. You can either comprehend it or compliment it. It's all authentic. There's nothing wrong with saying that the other guy's really good, too, and Aaron Rodgers is really fucking good. In this game, Rodgers got the ball out of his hands in 2.05 seconds, the quickest single-game figure he has ever recorded since Pro Football Focus started the data point. Rodgers also completed 8 of 15 attempts that traveled 10-plus yards downfield for 191 yards in the score, 4 of those 8 completions coming on third down. Rodgers finished the night with 5 big-time throws in a performance reminiscent of last season's MVP-winning campaign. That, according to Pro Football Focus, he was incandescent. He was otherworldly. He was spectacular. He was everything a league MVP is supposed to be. He performed at the highest level. He did his job. He gave his football team, the Green Bay Packers, an opportunity to win. No shame in that. When you get your ass kicked, when you get beat by one of the best, like I said, tip of the cap, my friend. Nothing wrong with that. Salute it. Sometimes the other guy is just better. Our defense did what they could. They tried as best as they could. But when you got tight ends crashing down on the line, the chip on your edge rushers, and your quarterback's getting rid of the ball in about 2 seconds, 2.05 seconds, it's going to be difficult to get a pass rush. Green Bay had an excellent game plan. They executed to near perfection, did what they had to do, and got out of Santa Clara with a big victory. Now they're 2-1. The 49ers are also 2-1. With Seattle coming up next, and Arizona after that, there's a realistic possibility, and I hate to be Debbie Downer, I hate to be negative Nancy, but there's a realistic possibility the 49ers could be 2-3 going into the bye week. If I had to grade and evaluate Jimmy Garoppolo's performance for this game, C+. A great drive, great resilient drive in the fourth quarter to take the lead, 28-27. The 13-play, 83-yard drive. The short drive before the half, decent. But you can't ignore the missed opportunities. You can't ignore the second week in a row not scoring until late in the first half after the first-minute warning. You can't ignore the near interception they threw to Kittle in the first quarter of the game. You can't ignore the poor decision to force it into double coverage to Kittle on a seam route and get picked off by Jair Alexander, and you had Ross Dwelly wide open in front of you. You absolutely cannot ignore the fumble and then not even making an attempt to go pick up the fumble in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, 7 minutes to go, down 24-21, opportunity to go ahead. Then, like I said, he redeemed himself, but you can't ignore these fuck-ups. They happen. They're real. You can't just say, well, he played well in this drive and that drive. Well, look at the game as a whole. He didn't play well for the majority of the game. For about 2.5, 3 quarters, he did not play well. And one drive in the fourth quarter does not erase all the negatives you have for the rest of the game. If you handle your business early in the game, you don't need to have a comeback to win the game. You don't have to worry about Aaron Rodgers having the ball with 37 seconds to go. Take care of your business. Play 4 complete quarters of football. Don't just play one good drive, one good quarter, one good half. Play 4 good quarters. Other quarterbacks do it. Derek Carr's doing it for the Las Vegas Raiders. He's playing a whole different level right now. That dude's awesome. Kyler Murray for the Cardinals. Dak Prescott for the Cowboys is elite. He's playing special football for the Dallas Cowboys, coming off a horrific injury. Other quarterbacks have shown they're capable. Matt Stafford, like I already said, Matt Stafford's amazing. He's played well every game. All I'm asking as a 49er fan from Jimmy Garoppolo, just give me one game of like good, consistent football for 4 quarters. Ever since the first half of the game versus Detroit, he hasn't been good. He wasn't good in the second half of that game. He wasn't good versus Philadelphia. He wasn't good. He was up and down in this game. He had some moments, and he had some other moments where it was like, what the fuck is this? What are you doing? You didn't see that dude wide open? You saw this guy wide open. You missed him. You don't know the rules of the game. A backwards pass is a fumble. With the running game being non-existent and the secondary being disgustingly terrible, or just trying, they're trying as hard as they can, but they're just not talented enough. And you're not getting pressure. Bosa's working his way back from ACL. Too many people have been hard on Nick Bosa. Bosa's coming back from a major injury and trying to get acclimated and work himself back into game shape. He hasn't played football in about a year. He went out in week two last year. Yeah, he had three sacks coming into this game, but Nick Bosa right now is not the true Nick Bosa that you saw pre-knee injury. He's not. It's going to take him a while to get going. Dee Ford, same thing. Major injuries last year for this brother. He's not going to be who he was every week. It's going to take a while to get back. Kinlaw got a sore knee all the time. I'm not making excuses. I'm stating facts. Like, guys, the defense is not what it was in 2019. You don't have DeForest Buckner. You don't have Quan Alexander. You don't have Richard Sherman. This is not the same team. Too many 49er fans think we're just going to run it back from 2019. This is not the same team. Not the same situation. You also have to acknowledge the division got better since 2019. Seattle was better. Seattle had no run game in 2019. They had to call in Marshawn Lynch off the couch to play running back for him late in the season. The Rams were coming off a Super Bowl loss. They were going through a hangover, the same hangover we went through last year, the same hangover that Kansas City is going through right now. Todd Gurley had arthritic knees. The 2019 Rams were just okay. And the Cardinals had a rookie quarterback in Kyler Murray. But now these teams have gotten better. The Rams are the best team in pro football, and they've added Jalen Ramsey and Matt Stafford since 2019 to improve their football team. DK Metcalf has emerged as a top 10 receiver for the Seahawks. Tyler Lockett is no slouch in his own right. Chris Carson, Russell Wilson is playing the best football of his career. The Cardinals brought in DeAndre Hopkins and A.J. Green and J.J. Watt. People could say, well, those guys are old, but they're still pretty good. That team's 3-0, and they're looking great. The competition hasn't been that great, but you got to play who's on the schedule. They're beating who they're playing against. So it's going to be tough for San Francisco going forward. It's not going to be easy. And for people who are talking about Super Bowl run, I'm not even sure they can even win the NFC West. I have no confidence they can. I don't believe in the quarterback. And I don't believe in the secondary or the running game or lack thereof. I'm just call what I see. Get mad. Moving on to the next game, this absolute crime scene that took place in Cleveland, Ohio. This debacle, this farce, this fiasco, this goddamn shame where Matt Nagy committed a hate crime against Justin Fields. Clearly, Matt Nagy did not get the memo that Black Lives Matter. Matt Nagy tried to kill Justin Fields last Sunday in Cleveland. That shit was disgraceful. That was shameful. That was abysmal. That was terrible. Matt Nagy should be arrested. He should be fired. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. Matt Nagy, if I'm running the Chicago Bears, I would have called Matt Nagy into my office and said, thanks but no thanks. I wish you well in your future endeavors. Clean out your desk and get the fuck out of here. For what you tried, what you did to our rookie first-round draft pick quarterback in yesterday's game, I would have told him, clean out your desk and get the fuck out of here. Your services are no longer needed. How do you roll into a football game with that kind of game plan? Your rookie, inexperienced quarterback, I said this before, I said this last week on the podcast, do you really want Justin Fields out there? I don't think he's ready. I don't 100% blame him for that. It's Matt Nagy's job to get him ready. It's Matt Nagy's job to put together an offensive game plan that's cohesive and sensible that works to accentuate Justin Fields' strength and hide his weaknesses. Do what he's good at. Utilize his athleticism. Take advantage of it. He's mobile. He can run. He can use his legs. Do not draw up the same game plan for Justin Fields that you drew up for Andy Dalton. That's asinine. That's fucking stupid as hell. Don't go into a game on the road versus the Cleveland Browns, a team with not one but two former number one draft picks on the defensive line in Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, and try to go 5-on-5 with nobody to chip, nobody to help, no mass protection, just five offensive linemen versus Cleveland's front, no help at all, with Jermaine Ifedi and 39-year-old Jason Peters going up against Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, and have your quarterback take 5- and 7-step drops. You don't move the pocket. You don't call any screens. There's no jet sweep touch passes. No easy completions. You don't cut off half the field to make it easier for him to go through his reads and progressions. No three-step drops. No quick outs to get the ball out of his hands quickly. That's the biggest thing Field struggles with, other than setting protection and reading defenses. The biggest thing he struggles with is holding on to the football too long. But in this game, there were a few instances where, yes, he held on to the ball too long. But in this game, he didn't have a chance. He had no shot. He had no chance. The all-time single-season sack record is held by Michael Strahan with about 23 sacks. Myles Garrett was on pace to break that record in one game. That's how it looked. He was going to get 23 sacks in this game. He had 4.5. Justin Fields was under siege. This was a hate crime. Matt Nagy might as well be Derek Chauvin, and Justin Fields is George Floyd. Matt Nagy had his knee on the back of Justin Fields' neck throughout this game. What was the fucking point of this? To show the world that I told you so, he's not ready. See? Y'all wanted him on the field. Y'all kept bothering me in the media, the fans chanting for his name. Everybody wanted to see Justin Fields. Ha, 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 ha. I told you so. He's not ready. This guy plays for your fucking team. Why would you sabotage your own quarterback? What is the point of that? What the fuck happened last Sunday in Cleveland? I'm not even a Bears fan. I'm a fan of black quarterbacks. I say that unapologetically. I root for these brothers. I root for Trey Lance. I root for Justin Fields. I root even for Russell Wilson when he's not playing the 49ers. And Kyler Murray, the same thing. I root for these brothers. Deshaun Watson, when he is on the field, I root for him. Dwayne Haskins, when he played in Washington, I was rooting for him. I root for these brothers. Tyrod Taylor in Houston, Teddy Bridgewater in Denver, I root for these brothers. I'm looking at this game, I'm like, what is going on? Is he trying to purposely fuck this kid up? What kind of sense is that? This dude is allegedly an offensive guru from spending time in Kansas City and Andy Reid's coaching staff, where Andy Reid called the plays. Andy Reid is an offensive guru, a genius, a football savant. Matt Nagy is nothing. I said this before in the podcast. So many people clown Mitchell Trubisky for how much he struggled with the Bears. Do you see why he struggled? I've made this point so many times before on this podcast. People always lament and talk about how all the rookie quarterbacks this year are struggling. Rookie quarterbacks in the NFL this year are a combined 1-10. The lone victory is Mac Jones beating another rookie quarterback, Zach Wilson from the New York Jets. Rookie quarterbacks starting in the NFL this season are 1-10. And so many people are ready to bury Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson and Justin Fields already. And say these guys can't play, they suck, they're overrated, they're rookies, you shouldn't put them on the field. They're in bad situations. I've said this time and time again. A rookie quarterback's success is predicated upon many extenuating factors. The coach, the game plan, the playmakers at the skill positions around you, the offensive line, all of those factors. It's not just one man out there playing by himself. This is the ultimate team sport. It's not just the 10 men that you're playing with on the field. It's the coaching staff. What kind of scheme are you in? What kind of game plan they put together? What are you doing when you're out there? And if you're having your quarterback line up behind five-man protection with two abysmal starting tackles in Ifedi and Peters, with four wide receivers, 10 personnel, one running back, no tight ends, four wide receivers, no one to chip, no one to help out and block, quarterback 5 7-step drops, first ever NFL start on the road, versus a quality football team, a playoff team from a year ago, a team that I picked to go all the way to the Super Bowl, a very good Cleveland Browns football team. And this is what you did to this young man. This is how you set this man up for failure. What was the fucking point of having Justin Fields go out there and get humiliated for all four quarters in this game? It's a miracle he even walked off the field. They said he had a banged up hand. It's a miracle he didn't lose his hand. It's a miracle we didn't have a Joe Theismann situation. He was laying on the ground with a fucking bone sticking out of his leg in this game. It's remarkable that Justin Fields is still upright and able to walk in a straight line and function after what Matt Nagy tried to have done to him. That was a hit job. Matt Nagy called in a hit to Justin Fields. He tried to take that man out. And to me, it just looked petty. Like, you're trying to prove to everyone, I told you, he ain't ready. See, y'all wanted him. Well, you got him, and he sucked. The Bears had 1 net yard passing in this game. 1 net yard. Justin Fields in this game was 6 out of 20 for 68 yards. He got sacked 9 times for a combined 67 yards, which gives you the 1 net yard of passing offense. 1 net yard. I've never seen that before. How do you even do that? To break down Fields' day in more in-depth, on throws behind the line of scrimmage, he was 1 of 2 for 10 yards. On short passes between 1 and 9 yards, he was 3 for 12, 31 yards. On medium passes, 10 to 19 yards, 2 for 4, 27 yards. Didn't even attempt to pass over 20 yards. Didn't have time to do that. He had 2.8 seconds to throw on average. He threw the ball on 3.4 yards a target on average. He had a 41.3 passer rating and 33.3% adjusted completion percentage. This was awful. There's no other way to put this. This was the worst rookie debut ever I've ever seen in the NFL. This was awful. This was sad. This was terrible, pathetic, woefully inept, abysmal, just absolute shit. And I'm not even, it's not Justin Fields' fault at all. It's not Justin Fields' fault. This is on the coach. This is on Matt Nagy. This is not a hyperbolic statement. Matt Nagy should be fired. Relieved of his duties, terminated, let go. Whatever. Fired. Get the fuck out of here, dude. Go away. If that's the best you can do, if that's the game plan you put together, you had a whole week to get ready for this game, and that's what you came out with for this rookie quarterback making his NFL debut in the NFL versus a quality football team on the road in the dog pound in Cleveland? Come on, dude. That's unconscionable. That's egregiously fucked up what Matt Nagy did to Justin Fields last Sunday. He should be fired, and I mean that. Let's try to be positive. Let's move on to SoFi Stadium to the Buccaneers-Rams, the game of the week. The two best teams in the NFC matching up. Brady threw for over 400 yards in this game. He also led the team in rushing, which is a bad thing. If Tom Brady is leading the team in rushing, you're probably going to lose, and that's what the Buccaneers did. They had 13 total rushing attempts in this game. Brady had over 400 yards passing, was largely accurate for most of the day. Some tough, tight window throws, but that Rams front being led by Aaron Donald, we've seen this. We saw this last week in the Monday night game. They're a bad matchup for Tampa. Tampa does not match up well with the Rams. They have no answer for the speed that the Rams have up front. They run around Tampa's offensive linemen. And Tampa has a good offensive lineman, but like I said, they can't handle what the Rams are doing up front. They're too fast. And Brady, as great as he is, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. He's no different from any other quarterback. If you get pressure on him, you can affect him. In particular, if you get pressure up the middle, you run some twists, some stunts, or you just put Aaron Donald in the middle and just tell Aaron Donald to do Aaron Donald things, he's going to get pressure, and he does. And it made Tom uncomfortable. There was no Antonio Brown in this game. Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson split the extra available snaps with 30 and 23 yards receiving respectively. There was also no Jason Pierre-Paul for the Buccaneers in this game. I was surprised, though. I mean, you still have Shaq Barrett. You still have Joe Tryon and Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea, William Golston. But the pressure wasn't getting there. Stafford had a clean pocket most of the game. Give credit to the Rams offensive line for holding up. And that's just pretty much what it was. And you give a guy like Stafford that much time to throw, he's going to carve you up. Stafford in this game had a clean pocket for the majority of this game, only pressured on 18.4% of his dropbacks, missed DeSean Jackson a few times early in the game on some downfield throws, but it connected later on for a touchdown pass. DeSean Jackson's still fast as shit. DeSean Jackson is quicker than a hiccup. DeSean Jackson could turn off the lights and be in bed before it gets dark. He's fast as shit still after all these years. And he can get behind defenses. He can create big passing plays down the field. This is the Sean McVay / Kyle Shanahan offense on steroids. When you have Stafford, who can make every throw, opens up the playbook, deep passes, short intermediate, tight windows, back shoulder fades, every route, doesn't matter. Matt Stafford can make the throw. And elite receivers like DeSean Jackson and Cooper Kupp, they can push it down the field and create big plays. That's the best football team in the NFL. And they just beat the defending champions. Like I said, they didn't have Antonio Brown or Jason Pierre-Paul, and the game was in L.A., but still, that game wasn't as close as the final score indicated. They pushed Tampa Bay around. Tampa couldn't get pressure. Rams could. control the line of scrimmage. That's football 101. Football is, was, and always will be a game predicated on two basic principles, blocking and tackling, and controlling the line of scrimmage and winning the battle up front in the trenches. That's what football is all about. And the Rams were able to do that. They've done that to the Buccaneers in two consecutive games now. So as great as the Bucs are, the defending world champions that brought back every starter from last year's team, they're going to have to figure out something going forward, because it's very likely you can get a potential rematch, a playoff matchup with the LA Rams. And with the Rams winning this game, they now have the tiebreaker. So the game will more than likely be back in the same SoFi Stadium, which is also the host of this year's Super Bowl. It's going to be tough for the Buccaneers going forward. I have no doubt that Brady and Arians and everyone else, the brain trust down there, can get that situation figured out. They did last year. You know, it's not going to be easy. Say a prayer for the New England Patriots, because a pissed off Tom Brady is rolling into Foxborough, the place that he called home and dominated for over 20 years and won 6 championships and led the Patriots to 9 Super Bowls and established his legacy as the greatest quarterback who ever played football. NBC primetime Sunday night game of the week. This is the game everyone's waiting for. It's the game I've been anticipating since the schedule came out. Circled out in your calendar. That's one of those deals. When the NFL Network has their schedule release special in the springtime, that's one of those matchups you look at and say, I got to watch that. I'm going to set aside some time. I'm going to clear my schedule to make sure I watch Tampa and New England in week 4, Tom Brady's return to Foxborough versus Bill Belichick. And a 1-2 New England Patriot football team that got pushed around by the New Orleans Saints last Sunday. Saints able to bounce back on the road to finally play a home game versus the New York Giants next week in the Superdome. That's going to be great for the people in New Orleans. Remember, their first game of the season was a scheduled home game, but it was in Jacksonville due to the remnants of Hurricane Ida in New Orleans. Decimated the entire area, the entire region, so it made it impossible to play a football game in New Orleans. But this week, they finally get to open up the season at the Superdome in front of all their fans. It's going to be loud. It's going to be crazy. The Giants roll into that game 0-3 after an inexplicably putrid loss to the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons are bottom feeders, but they beat the New York Giants. So what does that make them? The Giants retired the jersey of Eli Manning last Sunday. For the record, maybe the Giants should stop retiring people's jerseys. When they retired Lawrence Taylor's jersey on Monday Night Football in 94 versus the Minnesota Vikings, the Giants lost. When they retired Phil Simms' jersey, also on Monday Night Football, they lost. They retired Eli Manning's jersey last Sunday versus the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons. This team sucks. This team is the drizzling shits. They're already on the clock for the number one pick in next year's NFL draft. Maybe the Giants are in competition for that now. They beat the Giants at home. What is the state of New York football? New York City football, because the Bills are really good. They blasted Washington. Washington's supposed to have a top 5 defense from a year ago. All the guys coming back from last season, that defense looks like shit this season. That defense has not been up to snuff. They're 1-2. They're getting pushed around. They can't stop a nosebleed. They gave up 43 points to the Buffalo Bills, who appeared to have righted the ship. Ever since losing the first game to Pittsburgh, they made tuna fish out of the Miami Dolphins 35-0 and then just wiped out the Washington pro football team from Landover 43-21. So they're exempt. The state of New York football, the actual state of New York, is being carried by the Buffalo Bills. But the city of New York, holy shit, as far as football concerned, 0-6 is the combined record of the Jets and the Giants. Forget about it, right? My man Robert Saleh is looking like Rich Kotite right now. The Jets got shut out 26-0 on the road in Denver. But the Giants lost to the Falcons at home. The Jets have a rookie quarterback. They have nothing around them. The offensive line's a fucking disaster. The defense, the whole team's rebuilding. I don't give the Jets that much flack. But the Giants, this was supposed to be a good year. This is year 3 of Daniel Jones. Saquon Barkley coming back from ACL. Darius Slayton. You know, they're an okay team. They added Kenny Golladay in the offseason. They're supposed to be taking a step forward. They lost at home to the Atlanta Falcons. I can't get over that. When I saw that score, that was an ugly football game, by the way. That was Nicki Minaj ass ugly. They lost 17-14 to bottom feeder ass Atlanta. How do you get beat by the Atlanta Falcons at home? I don't care who you are. I would the Real Housewives of Atlanta are more intimidating than the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons are garbage, but they beat the New York Giants, and what does that make them? How do you do this? 0-6, two football teams that play in New York / New Jersey suck. Joe Judge also should be on the chopping block. If not him, then Jason Garrett as offensive coordinator, as a play caller. Jason Garrett, we fired. I'm all about firing people. I don't care if it's only 3 weeks into the season. We're not getting shit done. We're not getting shit done. It doesn't appear to be getting any better. I'll say Daniel Jones is a nice NFL quarterback if in the right system. He falls into what I've always been saying, what I said earlier. Put him in the right system around capable, competent people with quality playmakers at the skill positions and a coach and a coordinator who know what the fuck they're doing. And Daniel Jones, with his individual skill set, would thrive. And I mean that. I don't think he's a terrible quarterback. I think he's a pretty nice quarterback. I take Daniel Jones on my team. Jason Garrett calling plays? That's a remedial offense they're running. That's basic. That's like a white girl drinking pumpkin spice latte with Ugg boots on. That's basic as hell. Speaking of basic as hell, let's transition to the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. Wow. Ben Roethlisberger, I got two words for you. It's time. Take Tom Brady out the equation and Father Time is undefeated. For some reason, Tom Brady has the elixir to beat Father Time. He's been kicking Father Time's ass for a couple of years now. He's an anomaly. He's different. Everyone else, at some point, you got to come face to face with facts and reality and deal with Father Time and acknowledge when your time is up. And for Ben Roethlisberger, it's been a legendary NFL career, a first ballot Pro Football Hall of Famer. He will one day be wearing a gold jacket in Canton, Ohio. Two-time Super Bowl champion. Been a fixture of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense since he was drafted in 2005. Always been considered a top-five quarterback in his prime in the NFL. Like I said, future Hall of Famer. Ben's all-time great, the greatest quarterback in Pittsburgh Steelers history. Yes, I said that. Better than Terry Bradshaw is Ben Roethlisberger, the greatest quarterback in Pittsburgh Steelers history. With all that being said, it's time. Father Time has caught up to Ben Roethlisberger. He caught up to him last season. After Pittsburgh started out 11-0, Father Time came knocking on Ben's door. And when Ben answered the door, Father Time punched him right in the face, right between the eyes, and knocked Ben Roethlisberger the fuck out. And he's been walking through this season, sleepwalking through this season, punch drunk, just trying to figure out what's going on, trying to piece together his life. After Father Time knocked on his door and punched him in the face, it's time. It's over. It's time. Vaya con Dios to you, my friend. It's time. Ben Roethlisberger is washed. Ben Roethlisberger is washed. The time has come. He can't throw a ball more than 15 yards downfield. That might be generous. He can't throw a ball more than 10 yards downfield. His average time of releasing the football is 2.2 seconds. We all know this. Every team who plays against Pittsburgh is going to crowd the line of scrimmage. Their offensive line is still morbid and decrepit. Still a work in progress. It was a work in progress last year. The offensive line for Pittsburgh sucks. They're not good. They can't run the ball. They can't throw it deep. They can't protect. Ben can't throw it more than 10 yards. They have no imagination, no creativity. The offense is limited because Ben can't throw more than 10 yards. They suck. Pittsburgh's 1-2. How did they beat the Buffalo Bills in week one? How did that happen? Who knows? But they weren't good in that game. They weren't good last week, and they weren't good against Cincinnati. They're terrible. You hate to slam the door shut on a Mike Tomlin coach team. I got the utmost respect for Coach Tomlin. Mike Tomlin, on a consistent basis, is a top five coach in the NFL. That's another guy. I will gladly take Mike Tomlin on my team. He's awesome. He's special. He's a great motivator. He gets the most out of his guys. Take Bill Belichick out of the equation. Tomlin probably has like 4 or 5 Super Bowl rings. He has one. He probably had like 4 more if Bill Belichick and Tom Brady never existed. Mike Tomlin's amazing. And Pittsburgh fans who call for him to be fired every year are fucking insane. Mike Tomlin does a great job with that team, but he is handcuffed this season by a poor, old, aging, washed NFL quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger. And the problem is, you know, you can't really bench him. Who do you have behind him? Mason Rudolph? Dwayne Haskins? I don't know. That situation's a mess in Pittsburgh right now. Ben threw a hideous interception in this game. Tried to scramble to his right, got picked off, threw it right to a linebacker underneath. Then Joe Burrow came back and hit Jamar Chase for a touchdown. Jamar Chase had 2 touchdowns in this game. Everyone in the offseason, in the preseason, said Jamar Chase can't catch too many drops. He has 4 touchdowns in 3 games this year. Shut the fuck up. Jamar Chase is going to be special in this league. I knew Jamar Chase would be special since I saw him play for the 2019 LSU Tigers. Catching passes from Joe Burrow, the same guy he's catching passes from now. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, they might be the worst. They are. They are the worst team in the AFC North. They just lost to Cincinnati. Baltimore is better. They're 2-1. Baltimore knocked off Kansas City last week and a miracle win versus Detroit. I'll get to that after this. And then you got Cleveland, also 2-1. And I don't see it getting any better for Pittsburgh. You don't just get better with the player personnel that you already have. The people you're playing with are the people you have, and they're not good. First-round draft pick Najee Harris still can't get anything going on the ground. He managed 40 yards on 14 carries with 3 broken tackles. Of those 14 carries, only 1 went for a first down. Across 40 carries this season, he has 6 that have gone for first downs. Harris has racked up 102 yards through the air, also had 3 drops. The receiver is also not good. 5 different Pittsburgh players registered drops. Eric Ebron was most egregious of the bunch. He mishandled both of his catchable targets. Pittsburgh is not looking good. But like I said, the Baltimore Ravens, all you got to say about that game was the Detroit Lions. They won the game on a record 66-yard kick field goal from Justin Tucker, their all-world kicker, that bounced off the upright, off the crossbar, bounced off the crossbar into the air, reminiscent of the game-winning shot that Kawhi Leonard hit against the Philadelphia 76ers when he's playing for the Toronto Raptors years ago in the playoffs, where it kind of just bounces all over the rim and it finally goes in. This kick bounced off the crossbar. And you see on the replay, Lions fans are going crazy because they think it's going to roll forward. If it was anyone else but the Detroit Lions, that ball would have hit the crossbar and bounced forward and fallen short and been a missed field goal and the home team would have won. But since it's the Detroit Lions, the ball hits the crossbar and bounces up in the air, goes over the crossbar, through the goalpost. Good 66-yard walk-off for the Baltimore Ravens. And the only team in the NFL that will lose a game like that are the Detroit Lions. This team, this franchise, this city, that's sports city. What if you're a Detroit sports fan, God bless you. That's all I can say. If you're a Detroit sports fan, my heart goes out to you, man. God bless you. You have nothing to look forward to. The Lions suck every year. They might be lucky to go 4-13, 5-12 this season. The Pistons are awful. They've been a completely irrelevant basketball team for the past decade. Maybe Cade Cunningham will turn out good for them. Who knows? But they've been fucking nothing for about a decade now. The only people who talk about the Pistons are talking about the bad boy Pistons of the late 80s or the 04 championship team. No one has watched or cared about a Detroit Pistons game in the past 10 years. They're worthless. The Red Wings, Hockey Town, they've fallen on hard times. They're not that good anymore. Dino Cicerelli and Steve Yzerman are not walking through that door anytime soon. The Tigers, I can't name one player besides Miguel Cabrera, who's been playing there since Cecil Fielder was there in the 90s, it seems like. I can't name one player in the Detroit Tigers right now other than Miguel Cabrera. If you're a Detroit sports fan, you have my sympathies. Maybe Eminem will put a new album out, and it might actually be good. I don't know. I doubt it. You got Michigan. Michigan Wolverines of football, 3-0, and Ann Arbor. I don't know how close Ann Arbor is to Detroit. I've never been to Michigan before, but you know, you got that. Maybe this will be the year that Michigan finally beats Ohio State. Ohio State's not that good this year. Michigan is. So maybe this is finally the year my man Psycho Jim Harbaugh, former 49ers coach with the dad khakis on, maybe this is finally the year that Big Blue beats up on Ohio State and gets a win over the Buckeyes. That's all you got to look forward to, because all four sports teams in the city of Detroit are fucking garbage. And the Lions lose on a 66-yard field goal at home where the ball bounces off the crossbar and goes between the uprights. That's one of the most depressing losses I've ever seen. And teams with no luck, like the Detroit Lions, they lose football games like that. You ain't going to see, like, Kansas City or New England or San Francisco won't even lose a game like that. Tampa Bay is not going to lose like that. The Rams, the Seahawks, the Cardinals, the Cowboys, you know, good football teams, the Raiders, they're not going to lose a football game where the ball bounces off the crossbar from 66 yards out at home and then lose a game on the most improbable kick ever. That just rips your heart out. What should be noted in this game, though, is Lamar Jackson converting a 4th-and-19. Back-to-back weeks, Lamar Jackson's come through in the clutch. As like I said before, give this brother his flowers, please. Recognize and salute and observe this man. Top 10 quarterback in the NFL, Lamar Jackson. Big time throw on 4th-and-19 to move them into position to get to that 66-yard field goal for Justin Tucker. Lamar Jackson's playing awesome. Baltimore's 2-1. All the injuries in training camp, Baltimore's resilient. Baltimore's always going to figure out a way to make something happen. As long as you got Coach Harbaugh over there, Lamar, Baltimore is always going to figure out a way. Don't worry about them. Don't ever worry about the Baltimore Ravens. They're going to figure it out. And 2-1 right now, playing pretty good football. So are the Las Vegas Raiders. Salute to the Las Vegas Raiders. John Gruden, you know, this is, to me, a make-or-break year. He has a 10-year contract. He's not in any danger of getting fired. But he hasn't made the playoffs yet. But this team, I kind of want to slow it down and pump the brakes because the Raiders typically get off to a nice start and then falter late in the season. But for right now, you know, the Raiders are 3-0, playing really good football. Derek Carr, early season front runner, early season candidate for league MVP. He's playing outstanding football. On time, accurate, deep balls, intermediate, every throw, open the playbook, anticipation, great footwork, fundamentals, command of the offense. He's been in Gruden's offense longer than any other quarterback has been in a John Gruden offense. He's mastered the offense, which is a West Coast system for the most part. And Darren Waller and Ruggs and Hunter Renfro and all these guys, they're surrounded by Josh Jacobs in the backfield. You know, the Raiders are a really nice football team, and the defense has gotten better. They took care of the Miami Dolphins over the weekend. Great performance, great offense, great football being played in Vegas right now. The league is a better place when the Raiders are good. Certain teams in the NFL need to be good in order for the NFL to be at its best, and the Raiders are one of those teams. The biggest thing about this game that I'll salute and I'll call out and talk about, there was a play. I'm watching this game on NFL Red Zone, so I'm kind of watching like a lot of games at once to go from one game to another, whenever a team about to score, the best plays. It's like live-action highlights. I love Red Zone. Salute to Scott Hansen, NFL Network. Red Zone's awesome. If you don't have it, you should. But I'm watching this Raider-Dolphins game, pieces of it anyway, on NFL Red Zone, and it cut into Derek Carr, the Lions scrimmage, going through his audibles, and he says the name Damian Lillard, Damian Lillard, Damian Lillard, three times. He says Damian Lillard. And he checks into a different play, calls an audible. And instinctively, immediately, I knew what this audible was. They're taking a shot down the field. They're going deep. Because what does Damian Lillard do? Pulls up from 30, pulls up from 35, hits deep three-point shots. And what do you know? Derek Carr took a shot downfield to Henry Ruggs. The ball was a little bit under or overthrown. Not accurate. It was incomplete. But I knew it when he made that audible of Damian Lillard that they're taking a shot down the field. I thought that was cool. Salute to the Raiders. Good win. Like I said, the league's in a better place. The NFL's better when the Raiders are good. Other 49er fans ain't going to want to hear me say that. When you come out to the Bay Area, I'm not from here. I'm from Maryland. I've said that many times before in the podcast. But a lot of 49er fans born and raised out here in the Bay Area hate, loathe, and despise the Raiders and vice versa. Raider fans hate the 49ers. You know, for many years, they stopped playing each other in the preseason because usually someone got stabbed at a 49er-Raider game when the Raiders played in Oakland. So Oakland versus San Francisco, one side of the Bay versus the other. There's always shit being talked back and forth between Raider and 49er fans. You know, Raider fans will say, you guys don't even play in San Francisco. You play in Santa Clara. To which I would say, you play in Vegas now. Like, you don't play in Oakland anymore. Your team is not, your team left you twice. But I don't hate Raider fans. Like I said, Niner fans born and raised in the Bay, they hate Raider fans. I'm not from here. I'm not born and raised out here. I have no reason to have animosity with a Raider fan. The Raiders have never done anything to the 49ers. They've never beaten the 49ers in a game of consequence. The only way they could is if the Raiders and the 49ers played each other in a Super Bowl. That's never happened. The only time it came close to happening was 1983 when the 49ers lost to the Redskins in the 83 NFC Championship game, and the Redskins went on to play the then Los Angeles Raiders, and the Raiders beat the Redskins 38-9. But other than that, it's never even been close to the Raiders and 49ers playing in the Super Bowl. So for me personally, from an outsider, from someone born and raised in Maryland, I have no reason to hate the Las Vegas Raiders, Los Angeles Raiders, Oakland Raiders, West of the Mississippi Raiders, Saskatchewan Raiders, wherever the fuck they're playing at. I have no reason to hate that team. I just don't. They've never done anything to the 49ers. I got no problem with them. Derek Carr playing the best football of his career. Darren Waller is awesome. And give John Gruden credit so far, and Mike Mayock. They've been much maligned. They've been beleaguered. They've been talked about. People like me have been talking about Gruden should be on the hot seat. Mayock is definitely on the hot seat. Mayock doesn't have a 10-year contract. But give the Raiders credit. They've played good football, and they've tightened up their defense. And here they are, 3-0 first place in the AFC West. The Chargers are 2-1. The Broncos are tied for first place. They're 3-0. You know what that means? If the Broncos and Raiders are tied for first place at 3-0 and the Chargers are 2-1, you know who's in the bottom? You know who's in dead last place in the AFC West? What do you know? The Kansas City Chiefs are 1-2. Dead last. Many people's pick to go back to the Super Bowl for the third year in a row. This team has owned the AFC West for many years now. Even before Mahomes got there, when Alex Smith was the quarterback in Kansas City, they were always winning that division. But now they're 1-2, coming off a loss at home at Arrowhead to the L.A. Chargers. Turnovers is the biggest problem for the Kansas City Chiefs. Ball security. They cannot maintain possession of the football. Patrick Mahomes had a no-look interception in this game. Had a man wide open across the middle, and he, for some reason, decided to throw a no-look pass. And to me, this is the equivalent of like Steph Curry throwing a behind-the-back pass out of bounds on a 2-on-1 fast break, when a simple chest pass or bounce pass or a simple alley-oop would suffice. But you wanted to put a little bit extra on it and throw behind the bad pass and it goes out of bounds. This was the same thing. Mahomes had a guy wide open across the middle. He might have scored, but you throw a no-look pass, inaccurate, bounces off his hands into the hands of Asante Samuel Jr., just like his daddy, a ball hawk, always knows where the football is at, always somewhere around the football, and always ready to make a play. And he picked off Mahomes on this play. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a fumble. And I think Mahomes had another pick. Got to take care of the football. You can't win games turning the ball over. I think Kansas City gets arrogant a lot of the times because they've had so many wins over the years where they came from double-digit deficits to win. And I think they get complacent. They get arrogant. They think to themselves, well, we've been here before. We got Mahomes. We got 15 on our side. So we can come back and win this thing. Week one, they did that to Cleveland. They were down in that game and fought back to win it. But I look at the arrogance of the team, the ball security issues, and the defense has given up 30 or more points in every game they played this season. Cleveland, Baltimore, L.A. Chargers have all put up points versus the KC Chiefs. So, you know, you got to fix that. You got to fix your defense. You got to hold on to the football, obviously. That's not winning football. It's not complimentary football when you turn the ball over and you can't stop anybody from scoring on defense. I've always said for years, if you're going to beat Kansas City, you got to score at least 30 points to do it. Baltimore, 36 in week two. Chargers, 30 in week three. You are not going to beat this team scoring less than 30. They've only had that happen one time in the Mahomes-Reed era. And that was Indianapolis on Sunday Night Football in 2019, beating them 19-13. Other than that, every other game they've lost in the Reed-Mahomes era, The opposing team had to put up more than 30 points to do it. Real quick, a few more things before I get up out of here. The Carolina Panthers, man, that game on Thursday night last week, not a good game at all, 24-9 over the Houston Texans. But still, I made this point on the last podcast. Carolina's a team to look out for. Front seven, nasty. They are the league leaders on defense in every major category. Sacks, yards a game, points a game, everything across the board. They're number one. And they beat up on Houston on the third-string quarterback, rookie Davis Mills out of Stanford University. Sam Darnold, free from the tyranny and oppression of Adam Gase, is now a competent, real NFL quarterback. He threw for over 300 yards in this game. Played a very efficient, nice game. Only downside for Carolina in this game, they lost Christian McCaffrey with a hamstring and first-round pick J.C. Horn with a broken foot. But other than that, clean game, took care of the ball on both sides, kicked Houston's ass up front, pushed them around all game. They got a game plan. They got a team. They have a formula that travels. They're physical. They get after it. They get after the quarterback. They put pressure on you. You get nothing easy and nothing cheap against them. You saw the way they dominated New Orleans last week, 26-7. It made Jameis look foolish. A week after Jameis threw for 5 touchdown passes versus the Green Bay Packers. They shut down every team they played so far this year. And yes, you can look at the competition. You can say, well, they played the Jets with a rookie quarterback and Jameis Winston, who people are still unsure about, middle of the road, average, pretty good quarterback in my opinion. I always liked Jameis, but still Jameis is Jameis sometimes. And then took care of Davis Mills, like I said, a third-string rookie quarterback. So they've played 2 rookie quarterbacks so far this year. But at the end of the day, you can only play who's on the schedule. And when you look at Carolina's schedule, they're 3-0 right now. Tough game this Sunday versus Dallas. That can go either way. But after that, Philadelphia, not that good. Minnesota, you never know which team's going to show up. The Giants, pitiful. The Falcons, slightly above pitiful. The New England Patriots are not explosive football team. The Patriots, New England's one of those teams, they play football in a phone booth, similar to what I said about the 49ers last week with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback. You're playing football in a phone booth. They get no explosive plays. They don't push it down the field. Every yard they get is so difficult. It's so hard for them to put up points. They haven't put up 25 points is the most points they've scored all year. That was against the Jets in week 2. But one of those was a pick 6. The offense is not explosive. And going up against a nasty front seven like Carolina, that could be a long day for Michael McCorkle Jones. Arizona. Good football team, 3-0. That's going to be a tough test for Carolina. Washington, like I said, not good this year. Offensively, defensively, it's not good on both sides of the ball. Miami, same thing. Quarterback situation in flux. Tua Tagovailoa out. Broken ribs. Jacoby Brissett now playing quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. This team's 1-2 right now. Miami, up and down. This is a team that got shellacked. 35-0 last week to Buffalo. Miami, you don't know which team you're going to get. They should be better than what they are, but they're not that good. The offense is handcuffed. After that, they got the Falcons again. Then Buffalo, Tampa, that's a tough 2-game stretch. New Orleans in the Dome, tough 3-game stretch. But I look at this schedule. This team could very easily win 12 or 13 games this year. The Carolina Panthers can win 12 or 13 games this year. That's a good football team. And like I said, Sam Darnold, free from the tyranny and oppression of Adam Gase, is now a real NFL quarterback. Decent running game. Wants to get McCaffrey back from the hamstring, out for a couple of weeks. Defensively, nasty, physical, filthy, aggressive, hard-nosed, tough, make you earn everything you get. Carolina could easily win 11, 12, 13 games this year. I mean that. Good football team. Tennessee sitting in the driver's seat of the AFC South. That division is awful. 0-3, Indianapolis Colts. Who would have saw that coming? That was a team picked by many to go to the playoffs, win that division. Carson Wentz is supposed to be the difference. He's banged up with 2 bad ankles. Give him credit. Fair play to him for sucking it up and going out there and playing with 2 bad ankles at the same time. That cannot be fun. But that team sucks. Indianapolis is off to an 0-3 start. Not playing good at all. Tennessee is 2-1 in the driver's seat. Houston, same thing, 1-2. They're not good. Third-string rookie quarterback. You know, Jacksonville's in that division. Jacksonville's currently on an 18-game losing streak. Jacksonville beat Indianapolis in week 1 last year and then lost the last 15 games on the schedule. They went 1-15 last year. after getting a win in week one. They've begun this season 0-3. The time is ticking for Urban Meyer to go to USC and leave the NFL and go back to college. Trevor Lawrence, keep your head up, young man. Things will get better. Things should get better. You know, put it in perspective, Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions his rookie year. Wasn't good. So there's a precedent. It's not going to be good overnight. Like I said before, I'll say it again. Rookie quarterbacks are only as good as what's around them, and there's nothing around Trevor Lawrence the same way there's nothing around Zach Wilson in New York, and there's nothing around Justin Fields in Chicago. His own coach is conspiring to kill him. At least he don't have that in Jacksonville, New York. But the Jaguars had the lead in that game. They had a 104-yard kickoff return against Arizona, took a 19-13 lead, and then got shut out. Arizona goes on 18-0 run to close that game out and win 31-19. Trevor Lawrence had a flea flicker interception when he threw off his back foot, trying to throw an out route. A terrible decision, but he's a young quarterback. He's going to make those terrible decisions. Don't ever do that again, Trevor Lawrence. Don't ever throw a flea flicker off your back foot to the far sideline and hope that something good is going to happen, because it's not. This is the NFL. This is grown men. You're not in the ACC anymore. You're not playing NC State. You're not playing Duke or Georgia Tech or Boston College or Syracuse or Wofford. You know, you're not. There's no homecoming. There's no easy wins in the NFL. There's no bottom feeders except for the New York Giants. But other than that, he's a grown man. He's the best football players in the world. The speed is different. Ask Justin Fields about the difference in speed between the NFL and college. Justin Fields foolishly in the offseason said that, "I don't see much of a difference. It's the same speed. I don't see what the fuss is about." You see it now, right? You definitely see it now. He got run down by Myles Garrett in that game a lot of times. So the rookie quarterback's not doing well. Keep your head up. Trey Lance is the only one that hasn't started yet. Even Davis Mills got a start before Trey Lance did. So Trey's waiting on his opportunity. And for some reason, I got a feeling it's going to be sooner rather than later. I got a hunch. I'll save that for the preview show for my thoughts and feelings about the 49er quarterback situation going forward. You already know what time I'm on. I've been saying since training camp, I've been saying since the moment he got drafted that he's the best quarterback in the building. But we'll get to that later on this week, what I feel like might potentially realistically could happen for the 49ers going forward, and especially going into the upcoming bye week in about 2.5 weeks. More on that later on this week, but that about wraps up this episode of the Dion Gordon Podcast, NFL Week 3 in the books. Thank you once again for listening. Eternally grateful, always humble, very much appreciative. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.